Chapter 24. June. Valentine's Day has come and gone, but everywhere I turn, it's still all pink and red and hearts and flowers. It's enough to make a girl want to throw up. Not that I haven't been on the edge of that already. The RAs haven't even changed the hall bulletin boards to the spring kites and windy clouds they always put up in March. And it's already the 4th. Lately, I can't stop thinking about my father, about who we could be, about how I might find him. But I refuse to ask my mother again, and I won't go home. Which leaves me at a dead end, my brain on an endless loop, rehashing what little information I do have over and over again. I tried to ask Madame Matvienko again, but she closed the costume room door in my face, muttering in Russian like she didn't understand my question. So I've been throwing myself into dance, rehearsing every spare moment of the day and late into the night when the others have abandoned the studios for studying or greasy midnight Chinese food deliveries that they'll wear on their hips for months. Or hooking up, like Gigi. I stretch my leg across the bar in Studio G and can't keep myself from smiling in the mirror. Valentine's night, she came home all forlorn, like something went wrong on her oh-so-perfect date with Alec. She was all sweaty and worked up, so she'd either been dancing or something else entirely. But she had a paper towel wrapped around something she was trying to hide, something she tucked into the drawer, hoping I wouldn't notice, before she went off to shower. Of course, as soon as she was gone, I peeked. Photos of Bette and Alec, pretty much naked. Bette is confident, and a true bitch to leave those for her. I turn sideways in the mirror and run my fingers over my stomach and hips. I've never been naked in front of a boy, not counting summers in Jaehee's paddling pool when we were little. I could see why Gigi was upset, but she never said anything about it, not to me anyway. And the next day, she and Alec seemed fine. He came and got her in the morning, and they went on a walk or something. Now it seems like they're tighter than ever. She spends every waking minute with him, dancing, rehearsing, studying. And who knows what else? Maybe she has something to prove, to him, to herself. It can't be easy following Bette, on stage or in life. I know I wouldn't want to be in her place. As I finish my cool down, the studio's empty, except for my mirror image staring back at me from every corner of the room. In an instant, I hate the way I look. My eyes are shallow, my cheeks splotchy. I wish they'd keep the mirrors covered. I'm sick of looking at myself. I danced well, but when I'm not on my toes, a weariness settles in, the exhaustion visible. It doesn't suit me. I have to shake it off. I bury the voice inside that whispers, "You need to eat more if you want energy and strength." I stretch out into a deep V, laying my chest down on the floor, spreading my arms out to reach for my extended toes. I can feel the pain in my muscles as they tighten and spasm, then release, a calm washing over me. I rise and realize I'm not alone. Someone's watching me. Jaehee. He's standing in the doorway, and he ducks his head a little, suddenly bashful, when he catches me catching him. I can't help it. It makes me grin. The kiss we shared seems like ages ago. Now I can taste it on my lips. "Hey," he says. "You did good." I nod, still smiling, and he takes that as an invitation, which it was. Maybe. He walks in and plops down across from me. I'm so shocked, I don't know what to do.
"You've been working hard, huh? Seijin said you got a solo."
I nod again and stand, taking a sip of water from my bottle. I wonder what else she says about me. Why would she share that I got a solo? I start to gather my stuff. I quickly realize I smell like stale sweat and probably the same ginseng soap his mom uses, and want to put some distance between us. But he stands too, as if to follow.
"Where are you headed now?"
he asks, standing not a foot away. There's a smirk playing on his lips,
which are so pink and so pale, as if he knows he's up to no good.
"Where's Seijin?" I ask.
"Studying," he shrugs. "She's got a pre-calc test tomorrow, and she's been really cranky lately. I told her I'd see her later. And I, don't know, was thinking about,
He shrugs again, suddenly unsure of himself.
"You hungry?"
I look at him, shocked at his request. Then I gaze down at my dance clothes, feeling a bit naked. I'm a mess. I'm exhausted. But this is too good a chance to pass up. And I should eat something.
"Let me go change."
I've been so distracted obsessing about finding my father that I've neglected my plans for Seijin. But Jaehee's walking right into my trap. Or maybe, just maybe, he actually likes me? Half an hour later, after a quick shower, for which I stole some of Gigi's strawberry-scented body wash, we're at the diner down the block. None of the ABC dancers ever come here. It's all burgers and grilled cheese and other stuff they'd never touch. Me neither, usually. But today, I'm starving. I order a chili cheeseburger and a Coke, not diet. I've never eaten anything like this. Jaehee grins at me.
"You sure?" he says, sipping his coffee. "I thought you dancers didn't eat."
He pauses.
"Seijin hardly eats."
The waitress brings a breadbasket by, and I reach right into it. Like I'm a normal girl, buttering the bread and taking a big bite. I haven't had butter in literally years. It's rough going down, like I can feel the fat coating my insides. But I make myself swallow. I'm going to be a different June today. A regular girl. The one Jaehee knew all those years ago.
"You never come down to the old neighborhood anymore," he says, taking a piece of bread himself. No butter. "To church on Sundays or to the festivals."
"I don't really know anyone there anymore," I say, taking another bite. "Except my mom, and she's too busy for things like that."
"Yeah, I heard that her company is doing great."
I nod. The table groans under the weight of all the food the waitress lays down in front of us. Jaehee immediately reaches for one of my fries, then dips it into the meat sauce on his spaghetti. The sight of it makes my stomach turn. My chili burger sits in front of me, expectant. Taunting. I've ordered it, but I don't know if I can actually bring myself to eat it.
"Does your mom want you to join her company? Or, like, go to college?"
"I want to dance," I tell him, hoisting up the burger and holding it in front of my face. Half the chili slips out the other side, plopping down on the plate like a dead animal. Which pretty much is what it is. I can taste the bile in my throat. "I'm going to dance."
"Seijin is applying to Harvard and Princeton," Jaehee says, reaching for another fry. "She's going to study orthopedics."
He dips it in his meat sauce.
"You know, be a bone doctor. She thinks the dancing will make her stand out."
He won't stop talking about Seijin. If I want my plan to work, I have to take control of the situation. I have to get him to stop thinking, and talking, about Seijin. And I can't believe she doesn't want to go into a company. To at least try to audition for a company. To be a professional dancer. Will she throw it all away? What's the point of it all if she doesn't want to be a ballerina? I make myself take a bite. The meat is still a bit bloody and salty in my mouth. The chili is hot and pungent, savory. The whole combination is delicious, unlike anything I've tasted. I swallow and take another bite, then another. Jaehee grins at me.
"Good, huh?"
he says, twirling his spaghetti and slurping it up. He lifts his fork to me.
"Wanna try it?"
I lean forward, just enough so that the V-neck of my sweater slinks low, and take the hand holding the fork, bringing it to my mouth. I slurp the spaghetti just like he did, and grin. "Delicious." I eat a fry and then another, and another, then look back up at him.
He has a glint in his eye. I look down at my plate, sure I'm blushing, as the heat creeps down my neck. I look back up at him.
So what will happen with you and Seijin when she's off to Princeton or Harvard? I ask.
Jaehee's a smart kid, but he's hardly Ivy material. He shrugs.
I'm sure I'll see her around, he says. My parents want me to go to Queensboro, then help with the restaurants. Even marry her, maybe, because her dad's so influential in Seoul.
Is that what you want? I ask, leaning forward again, looking right into his eyes.
They're dark chocolate and sleepy. He shrugs again, then takes another few bites.
I still want to draw.
Ever since we were little, Jaehee scribbled all over everything. He drew the old animes we watched at his Harmony's house, and he made endless portraits of me. I didn't know he still did it, but I'm glad. I'd love to see some of your art sometime, I say, picking at my fries. My stomach is screaming in protest, but I make myself take another bite. A normal girl.
If you'll show me.
It's almost dark as we head back to the dorm, walking through the leftover February snow in March, and I'm grateful, for once, that Gigi's obsessed with Alec. She's been holed up in his room for days, and I know she won't be back till bedtime. Or later. Jaehee sits on my bed, completely comfortable, as if he's been here a gazillion times, as if we're just the same as we were once, long ago. I don't know why he's being so nice. I don't know why he's hanging out, pretending nothing's changed, after so many years of ignoring me. I don't ask him. I try not to care. It was thrilling sneaking him upstairs without being spotted by Seijin or the other Korean girls. I sit next to him, and we pore over his draft book, which he had stashed in his bag. He points out this drawing or that. His drawings are so good, so familiar, a grown-up version of his classic bold strokes, still with that wild touch of whimsy. As we reach the end, he tries to close the book, pulling it out of my hands. Wait, I say, pulling it back. I'm not done yet. In the back, there are drawings of a dancer, long and lithe, all sharp angles and soft curves. They're beautiful. It takes me a minute to realize they're not of Seijin. She's me, I say. He looks at me then, for a long time, like he's making up for all the moments we lost. My heart leaps, and my stomach lurches, but this time, it's not the bile that's with me all the time.
I drew them the other day, when I was watching you. I don't really know why.
His fingers graze my arm, the heat of them penetrating through my sweater. He touches my cheekbones, my jawline, studying me, memorizing me.
You're beautiful, he says.
And then he leans in, kissing me. My heart is hammering and my brain churning with thoughts of chili and onion breath and how it's finally happening for real and how I should have brushed or maybe thrown up or a gazillion other things. But he just leans close, his breath on my ear, and says, shh, as if he can hear my thoughts going a mile a minute, as if he's known what I've been thinking all along.
It doesn't matter, he says. It's okay.
It's dark when Gigi finally comes in. Jaehee left hours ago, and since then, I've been lying on the bed, emptied and brushed and scrubbed clean, but I can still feel all the places where his lips have been, like he's marked me, like I really am a different June. After Jaehee left, I showered, and I looked at myself, naked, in the mirror for a long time. I saw the way my ribs jutted and the way my backbone arched, visible, when I turned. And I thought, maybe if he could find me beautiful, I could be. And I was so excited, and I couldn't wait to see him again, and kiss him again, and I almost didn't even care about how it will affect Seijin. Almost. But then I threw up. I had to. I couldn't hold it all in, not anymore. I weighed myself on the small scale I've got hidden in the closet.
102. My first thought was to head back to the bathroom, or to the studio to dance it off. But exhausted, I dressed in my oldest flannel pajamas and climbed into bed. It's been 3 hours now, and the shadows have fallen, and they're praying. Like the old beasts Jehee's grandma used to tell us about, feasting on my mind. I have to tell someone, and since I can't tell anyone else, it'll have to be Gigi. She startles me when she comes in, flips on the light, and finds me sitting straight up in bed.
"Oh, I thought I was alone," she says with an awkward giggle. "Were you sleeping?"
"I kissed someone today," she grins.
"Fun!"
She shuffles around the room, taking off her snow boots, tossing her ski cap in the corner, shaking out her curls.
"Anyone I know?"
"I can't say, but I had to tell someone." I look up at her, and she has that glow, the light flush of first love, like a light's been switched on inside her. Maybe I have that glow too? "He thinks I'm beautiful."
"Of course he does, June," she says, her smile genuine. "You are beautiful."
I smile back at her, and for the first time in a long time, I let myself think it's true. I lie back down on the bed, tired but happy, as she shuffles about getting ready for bed. Then I realize what I've done.
"Gigi,"
I whisper, just as she opens the door to head to the showers.
"Gigi, you can't tell anyone, though."
She looks surprised, conflicted, as if she's tired of keeping my secrets.
"No one can know."
She nods, quiet, and shuts the door behind her.
Chapter 25. Gigi. "Someone tell me the story of Giselle," Mr. K says at the start of rehearsal.
"She came here from California,"
Will calls out, winking at me. There's a twitter of giggles from some younger level 5 and 6 girls who still think he might be straight, but the rest of us maintain serious faces. Mr. K doesn't really have a sense of humor.
"Someone tell me the story of the ballet, Giselle, please,"
Mr. K says, his face is stern. "I didn't think I had to specify that. I didn't know you all wanted to behave like idiots tonight."
Hands go up and he scans them, settling on Eleanor to answer. "Yes, Miss Alexander, please tell us what this ballet is about."
She bites her fingernail before starting. Bet cringes. "Giselle is about a young peasant woman who falls in love with a nobleman."
"Is that all?"
he asks. Her face turns pink as she opens her mouth to continue, but Bet interjects. "And because she's not allowed to love him, she dies of a broken heart." Her tone is cold and matter-of-fact as she glances back at me, flashing her big, feathery eyes in my direction. Mr. K rubs his beard.
"Must be the Ides of March you all aren't thinking."
He paces before the mirror.
"The ballet, Giselle, is about much, much more. You all have simplified the story, taking out the most important part, the heart of it all. It's about nature and fate and love and desire."
He points to the ceiling.
"It's about the gods."
He shakes his head, then continues.
"Giselle loves someone she isn't supposed to, and he loves her."
Alec pulls me into his chest and wraps his arm around my waist. I feel his heart thumping, his thumb pressing into my hip bone. We're back to normal after our fight on Valentine's Day. He swung by my room the next morning, and I took him to my little corner of Central Park, which was totally deserted. It looked like one of those I Heart New York ads. The untouched snow, the trees weighed down in white, the morning quiet. And there, I told him, not about my heart, but about my run-in with Bette, about what she said about the hotel, and that I couldn't compete with that, that I'm a virgin, and even though I really like him a lot, and if I'm being honest with myself, even though I may love him, I'm not ready for that. Not yet. And he took my hand and was so sweet when he told me that he liked me so much, too much. He said he'd wait, that we could go as fast or as slow as I wanted, that we're on my timeline, that we don't ever have to. That made me feel better. It did. For a minute. But then, those pictures. I watched Bette, sighing and rolling her eyes and being dramatic as Mr. K continues his lecture. I can hardly look at her after seeing those naked photos of her on Valentine's Day. I haven't told anyone, not even Alec. I want to trust what he says, but I'm waiting for him to be honest with me about what he had with Bette. They've known each other forever. They come from the same kind of family. They both belong in this world. He and I, we're all wrong together. Could his feelings for me ever be that strong?
But the forces of nature did not commend this union. It was not sanctioned. This must be a hard thing for you all to make sense of. It is an old world idea of fate.
Mr. K goes on, certainly enjoying the sound of his own voice and the adoring looks he gets from the ballerinas.
Today, if you want something, you go after it. But people did not always believe this. And as is still true today, when you go against fate, the result can be dangerous.
He mutters something in Russian to the teachers, and I wish I knew what it was. I catch Bette's eye. She is staring me down. Her pink lips turn up at the corners, the hint of her one dimple barely indenting the surface of her perfect face. I try to focus and soak in Mr. K's words. The first time I ever saw Giselle was when my mother took me to the San Francisco Ballet. I practically held my breath the entire time as that ballerina glided across the stage, shimmering as if her delicate arms and legs were made of stars. I loved that we shared a name, and I felt an immediate kinship with the role, even though I was certain I'd never be in love quite like that. Now I lean a little more heavily against Alec, wondering if maybe I'm finally tasting the kind of romance that drives the ballet.
In life, there are many things beyond your control. And in ballet, even more so.
Mr. K's voice fills the room.
Some are born to dance. Some are born with afflictions, things that stand in the way. And some are born in second place, always in the shadows of others. And no matter how hard they try or how hard they work, they'll never surpass them. That is what this ballet is about, he says. The forces of nature, what is written in the sky, what you are born with, butterflies. I need to feel love and danger in your variations. I need to experience the joy and sorrow of destiny.
He finishes and waves us off.
Alec, Gigi, show me what you've got so far.
The teachers turn their backs and walk to their chairs at the front of the studio. Alec sneaks and kisses me on the mouth, like Mr. K's speech was a direct order to us. His hands cup my face, and I have never been steadier, held like that. After a few moments, he pushes his hands back so that his fingers find the back of my neck. I gasp at the spark of desire, We move to the center. It's supposed to be midnight in the peasant village cemetery, and I'm in a world of female spirits who have died before their wedding nights. I inch forward in tiny half steps on point as the light gradually illuminates my path. I am dead, my skin and hair powdered white, transforming me into Giselle. My body blending with the stark whiteness of my long white practice tutu. I move beneath imaginary drooping branches of cemetery trees with flowers in my hands. The dead spirits, the Willis, swirl around me. The core girls flood the middle. We dance together, and I am in sync with them all until Alec arrives at my grave. I hide and watch him as he places flowers there. I try not to smile at him. Try to stay in character despite how handsome he looks. We skirt around each other and then dance our paw. He lifts me like he's been doing it for years.
Yes, yes, Mr. K says. Push through,
the other male teacher, Dobrava, says.
The minute you pause, the movement is over.
The Russian teachers clap when we're finished. We're getting better and better, I whisper to Alec. Yeah, it's so weird. We've only done one other paw together, but I feel like I've been dancing with you forever. He kisses my forehead and prepares to cool down and stretch while other dancers perform in front of the teachers. Everyone disperses, some off to dinner, others to studios to continue practice, most up to the dorms for showers. We are left alone, which I like. Even Bette doesn't linger to glare at me or try to get Alec to talk to her. Every time I see her, I think of those pictures. Seeing their bodies entangled like that. One endless puzzle, so that I don't know where Alec's ends and Bette's begins. I can never be that girl. A girl like Bette. One who would take off her clothes and let someone take pictures. A girl who could be so naked in front of a boy. A girl who would let a boy touch her like that. Insecurities have been piling up in my head. Is that the kind of girl Alec wants? I wonder if it was Bette's idea, or Alec's. I don't have the courage to ask him about it, to find out whose idea it was. Would Alec want me to do something like that? Alec leans on top of me, pushing my back against the wall and helping to stretch my leg. The Giselle score still trickles through the speakers. I start to hum, trying to regain my focus. I told myself I'd ignore it. I won't involve Alec. I can deal with it. He opens his mouth to speak, but I put a finger to his lips so he doesn't make a sound. This is my favorite part of the score. He licks my finger, then moves it to kiss me. His hands find their way to the small of my back, where he bunches my dance skirt. We are sweaty and sticky and almost naked in our dancewear. Tiny goosebumps cover me. My heart starts to race, the dangerous kind. Where my head gets light and spots erase my eyesight and my hands get shaky, I push him away, and then I can't help but think of Bette. She would never push Alec away. The girl in those pictures would strip down right here. What's wrong? Alec whispers. I don't answer. He moves my leg to the side and hoists himself up a little. I'm trapped beneath his weight, but don't want him to move. He traces his fingers along my collarbone. You even feel sad, he says. We did awesome today. What just happened? You were happy a few minutes ago. This is the same thing that happened on Valentine's Day. It all slams me again. The picture still etched in my memory, and the worries about someone being out to get me right behind them. The message on the mirror, the medical report, the black rose. What else will they do? Are they trying to get me to leave? Because that won't be happening. You've got to start talking to me. He pulls me close so that I fold into his side, like a crease in a paper. I let my hand wander across his chest, and I kiss him hard to forget about it all. We kiss for such a long time I fear I'm losing my breath. I can feel my erratic heartbeat drum in my ears. I blush and move my arm awkwardly away. My fingers tremble and I rub my temples. I wiggle out from under him and roll over onto my side. I don't know what to say or how to form the words to tell him about my condition. I riffle through my bag and put on the monitor Dr. Khanna gave me. I thought carrying it in my bag would make me more responsible. My heart's so unsteady lately, I can't not wear it. I can't not worry. What are you doing? He grabs my arm before I can clasp the band of the monitor. I surrender and let him examine it. What is it? Tell me, he whispers, running his fingers over my monitor. I've never seen you wear this watch before. It's like one of my sports watches, he says. Doesn't seem like your style. He chuckles. It's not a watch, I say, clicking it on so it can tell me how high my heart rate is and send 1,000 little warning vibrations. I stare at a little hole in his tank top while I wait for him, or the monitor, really, to say something, to fill the quiet. I poke my finger into the tiny opening, wanting to do everything and anything but tell him about my condition. I stare at his beautiful eyes and beautiful mouth. What will he say? How will he treat me? Will he still like me? My heart skips as the worries whiz around in my head. The stupid monitor buzzes. I'm all sweaty from his body heat and rehearsal and stress. I sit up. I feel his eyes on me, full of confusion. I feel guilty that I don't 100% trust him with my secret, that I don't trust anyone here with it. Alec leans up beside me and plays with a loose curl that's escaped my bun, twisting it around his finger. Something's wrong. His thumb draws shapes from my temple to my cheekbone. Then he leans in close and I feel his breath on my neck. Don't you trust me? I gulp, then lie. Yes, I trust you. Then what is it? He whispers in my ear, each word tickling my skin, causing that thump-thump between my legs. I'm different, I say. He continues to kiss my neck. I know that. It's why I like you. No, like really different, I say. Like, I have a thing.
A thing?
He says, his mouth now finding its way to the back of my neck. You have lots of beautiful things, like your neck. The sensation flickers over me, like a warm rain, and I can't concentrate to get the words out. He nibbles and kisses the back of my neck, and my heart couldn't slow down if it wanted to. I want him to kiss me all over, in places I've never let anyone see, places he's not supposed to touch. The monitor buzzes again, yanking me out of the moment. I squirm away a little, needing the distance to help me speak the truth. There it is again, he says. Your watch. I need to tell you something, I say, my insides now kneading and twisting with fear. It's not a watch. I practice the words in my head a couple of times as we sit in silence. Everything stops as his blue gaze fixes on me. It's a heart monitor, I whisper, each word barely even a real breath. A what? He says. Heart monitor, I repeat, making the words heavier. I'm trying not to look in his eyes, trying not to cry. Why do you need it? He reaches for my wrist, and I pull it away. I have a condition, I start. A what? He interrupts. But I clamp my hand over his mouth before he can finish. I need the quiet Alec right now, the one that would wander through Central Park in the snow just listening to me tell him about home. The Alec who sits to the side while I practice my solos and doesn't give any advice on how to make them better. Let me get this out, okay? Tears creep toward the corners of my eyes, and I fight them off. I remember all the times I've had to tell someone about my heart condition, how their faces have arrested in shock, how afterward they've treated me like I'm fragile, how beneath all their words and actions has always drifted a current of pity. I don't want Alec to look at me like that, to treat me like I'm broken. I gulp and spit it out. I was born with a hole in my heart. It's called a ventricular septal defect. Alec's eyes widen as I repeat the scary scientific words. What does that mean? He asks. My heart's messed up, I say, and I have to be aware of it. I hold up my wrist to flash the monitor. Always. Oh, is all he says, then strokes my hand. I'm fine, I say, and feel like I'm saying it one of the thousand times I've said it to my mama and dad on the phone. So, he says. Before he can finish his sentence, I blurt, I should be wearing it all the time, but I don't. I hate it. When I get too excited, it beeps or buzzes to alert me that my heartbeat has changed. It's like an alarm. It sounds serious, is it? His eyes flood with worry. And you should be wearing it if you're supposed to. It can be serious, but I'm fine, I say again. You sound like my mama. Can it be fixed? I shake my head no. They operated when I was a baby. But it'll never be perfect. So I've always just dealt with it. I search his face for a reaction, but I can't read it. I feel like he's inched away from me. He must think I'm a freak. My hands start to quiver while he asks me more questions. He's going to break up with me now. I know it. I prepare myself for the words. Sweat collects behind my knees. My head feels a little light, and my monitor buzzes again. Alec stops staring at me. Why did it do that again? He reaches for me. And you're shaking. Why? I thought you'd, I start. Thought I'd what? He says, and then he looks at me, like really looks at me, all hard and deep, and my tears finally come pouring out. He pulls me down next to him, and I rest my wet cheek on his chest. He wraps me up tight in his arms, and I feel like I'll never fall. I let the tears rush out until there aren't any more. He's that quiet Alec again. The one who strokes my back, hums in my ear, and squeezes his arms tight around me. I hear him whisper, Gigi, I like you, and nothing you can say can change that. The words wrap around me. Gigi? I hear from the studio door. Both Alec and I turn around. One of the petit rats shuffles up to us. Her little brown bun looks like a chocolate cupcake atop her head. She curtsies. She's holding a small pastry box. This is for you, she says. Thanks, I say. But you didn't have to give me anything. What's your name? Margaret, she whispers. It's not for me. One of the RAs told me to give it to you. Okay, I say, taking the box from her tiny hands. I wonder who it's from. She scampers out of the studio while I untie the ribbon. Alec starts to nibble on my shoulder. What's this? I say, then smile at Alec. Is this a surprise from you? Just what I needed after telling him my secret. No, he says, craning to look in the box. I didn't send it to you. My insides get all squishy and weird as I pull off the note attached to the bottom. I flip it over. It reads, For your heart, a little start. Hope it doesn't fall apart. A small warning here. What crawls beneath, dark and devious, it will be crushed. As for your little secret, for now, at least, we'll hush. I throw the card and rip open the box. Inside, there's a moldy, heart-shaped cookie stuck on a sticky pad, surrounded by dead cockroaches. Startled, I drop it. I shriek in fear, that quickly swells to anger, and jump up. I run to the hallway. Alec follows, frazzled, furious. I can't hear what he's saying to me. Girls whiz by, in and out of other practice studios. "Who left this?" I shout, shaking the empty box. "Who's messing with me?" They stop and stare at me like I've lost it. And maybe I have. I hear the blood whooshing through me and feel my heart pounding. Alec tries to pull me back into the studio with him. I can't stop yelling, "Who? Who?" They whisper to one another, say I'm crazy, paranoid. They leave me there to scream and scream and scream until my shirt is all wet and my knees are so wobbly I sink to the floor. "Gigi," Alec says, his arms cradling me, pushing me up. "It's just mind games. This is exactly what happened to Cassie." I am shaking, and he tries to hold me up, but I feel like I'm going to fall. "Alec, I just..." "They're trying to rattle you." He pulls me back into the studio, away from all the whispering and stares. "It's okay," he repeats over and over again. "You've got to be strong here, Gigi. We all want to be the best here, and you are. I know you have it in you, but you can't let them shake you. You can't let them win." "I don't understand why they're doing this." I wipe messy tears from my face and instantly want to bring up the pictures of Bed and him, but I can't. He pulls me close and strokes my back. "It's Bed," I whisper. "I know it is." "What?" He pulls back. "It's Bet. It has to be. She gets desperate sometimes, but she wouldn't do that," he says. "Plus, she's deathly afraid of cockroaches." "You don't believe me," I say, more tears pouring out. "It's not that. I just know her. And that's really not her style, is all. Not saying you're wrong. She wrote that message on the mirror. She did other things, too." I pulled back. "You're defending her." My eyes are so full of tears I can hardly see him. Everything's a blur. Maybe he still loves her. Maybe they aren't quite done yet. Why else would he take her side? "She doesn't do that stuff," he says. She's got him fooled. He mumbles a bunch of things, but I can't hear him anymore. My ears fill with sounds of my own fear and tears. He pulls me close even though I fight his embrace. "Everything's gonna be fine." His words land in my hair, and his arms close in around me. He says it over and over again, but I don't know if I can believe it. At dinner in the cafe, people whisper all around me. My cheeks still feel hot, but I'm pouring myself into the book for English class and trying to find flavor in the bland piece of chicken on my plate as a distraction. This is the time when I miss the ballerina versions of Mama's food the most. Steamed cabbage sprinkled with red chili flakes, black-eyed peas with a tiny portion of bacon, turkey, of course, chicken dusted with a mix of flour and breadcrumbs before it's fried in olive oil, all kinds of stewed greens. Not even a comforting text from Alec can erase the homesickness today. I want to tell my parents, talk to them about what's happening, but I don't dare. Mama already wants me back home. If she knew about this, she'd demand I leave the school. One of the level 6 girls laughs in my direction, and I hear them whispering about my meltdown in the hall. I want to shout and scream again. Instead, I just shove away from the table and walk away, trying to stay calm and poised. They're not who I'm really mad at. I know who I should be mad at, and it's about time I faced her. I take the elevator down to the 2nd floor, and then the 1st, and I don't stop until I've looked through every studio and find her in Studio D, at the center, practicing pirouettes. "Bet," I say with an edge, pushing the door open. There's no pretense here. No reason to pretend that this is going to be a civil conversation. We both know she's been doing things to me, and it needs to stop. We need to talk, I say, feeling a little like someone else, someone not at all afraid of her. About what? She doesn't move a muscle, staying in fifth position, and her nose crinkles like she smelled something foul, like that something is me. I straighten my back even more. I let my shoulders sink down and back, like they've grown the heaviest and most incredible set of wings. You did something terrible, I say, gaining confidence. Actually, several terrible things. I did something terrible, she says, finally turning to look at me. Her eyes narrow, but her face is steady, not backing down. The message on the mirror? The picture of me and Henri in the light closet? The naked pictures on Valentine's Day? And that disgusting cookie, I say. And I shouldn't forget the medical report. You went through Nurse Connie's medical files and stole private information. Pictures? A medical file? Cookie? The tone in her voice makes me feel like we're talking about unicorns and leprechauns. Like I've made up a whole bunch of things. What are you talking about? She sputters out again and seems so stunned by how angry I am. Come on, I say. It's not like I don't know you hate me. I inch toward her. Well, that's news to me, she says, because I don't hate you. Then why did you do all those things? It's been you from the beginning. You're messing with me, I say. Her nonchalance stokes my anger. I'm messing with you, she repeats, mocking me, like we're in kindergarten and she's broken all the crayons in my box. I don't know anything about a medical report or pictures. I heard about that cookie thing. That wasn't me. I don't do roaches. But fine, yeah, the other stuff, the message on the mirror, the shot of you and Henri, yeah, sure. I wanted to remind you that Alec was mine, that this school was mine, and whatever. But you got Sugar Plum Fairy and you got Giselle, so there's nothing to be jealous of here. You won. There's a finality in her voice, an exhaustion. So you don't have to be worried about me anymore. What? And that makes it okay? I say, trying to keep my voice from wavering and my hands from shaking. You can do whatever you want because you're having a bad year. You can mess with me because you don't like me, because Alec likes me. You can't do all this shit to me. I didn't even know I was capable of swearing, let alone swearing right at someone. And even now, you're not owning up to it all. She sighs, like I'm some pestering child, checks herself in the mirror again and says, what are you gonna do? Go all ghetto on me or something? Beat me up to get the answers? My eyes are tornadoes now, and though I've never hit anyone in my life or been hit, I want to slap her. Throw my entire palm into her face so it leaves a mark. The word ghetto drums inside me. I want to shout that I've never been to the ghetto. My heart feels like it might just stop. The beats pulsing like a hummingbird's wings. The muscle threatening to give up. Stop being crazy, she says. I take a few deep breaths, allowing my center to lengthen, so I feel 20 feet tall. I'm a ballerina. I am in control. She smirks, like she knows she's won. I take the pictures I've been carrying around out of my dance bag. I throw several of them on the floor. Images of her litter the polished hardwood, her breasts, the tops of her thighs, Alec's hands around her, touching her, her smug face looking right up at me. She moves forward with instant recognition and maybe revulsion. Where did you get those? Have you been in my room? She says. Those are private. Stop being crazy, Bet. I mock her. She leans down to gather them as I kick them away. Try denying those. And there are more. I leave her, scrambling to pick them up.
Chapter 26. Bet. I spend the next 2 weekends at home to avoid any accusations about messing with Gigi. The RAs overheard her breakdown. It only took a little pressure from them before she spilled about the pranks. and that's all everyone has been talking about for the past week and a half. I still don't know who gave her those naked pictures of Alec and me that I kept in my keepsake box. Eleanor was out with me that night. The only other person who knew about them was Will. I know he hates me now, but we were close once, like brother and sister. Would he really do that to me? We've had to have individual meetings with the school counselor and the RAs about bullying. I'd rather deal with the biggest bully in my life, my mother, than all of them. And she's at her worst during family holidays. It's the Easter weekend. We have a practice room at home that my mother had installed when I was 12, an offshoot of the basement, complete with a wall of mirrors, a full bar, a professional sprung floor, and a series of ceiling fans. So weekends away from school aren't like a break at all. They never are. And there are no fun adventures with Alec to look forward to. No stolen moments in my bedroom, or kisses pressed against the mirrored wall. Those moments with Alec had almost helped me erase all the terrible memories of my time trapped down in the basement practice room. But without him here, they're rushing back at me.
You showering soon?
Adele calls down, and I assume the sun is setting, but there are no windows down here, no hint of the real world, not even a clock. Adele is allowed to take the morning off from dancing. My mother lets her help with the Easter holiday cooking and holiday happiness, but I'm expected to stay down here and make sure I don't lose my pitiful role the way I lost Giselle. Soon, I call back up. But I'd rather break my ankles dancing late into the night than do what we have on the agenda for this evening. Easter dinner with Nana and Grandpa and my horrible cousins from New Jersey and Connecticut. And, of course, the Lucas clan. I begged my mother not to invite them, since Alec broke up with me and is apparently in love with someone else. Whose fault is that? She'd said. Whose fault is it that Dad left? I asked in return. Adele squeaked like a crushed mouse the second the words left my mouth, and I gasped at the way the thoughts in my head sometimes get spoken out loud without my actually deciding to say them. I've gotten so used to casual cruelty at school that I'd forgotten what kind of impact it has at home. My mother didn't slap me, but I know she wanted to. Instead, she marched out of the kitchen and into the small breakfast nook connected to the kitchen, which, given the fact that no one eats around here, my mother has turned into a drinking nook. She knows the worst thing she can do is imply that I'm the one making her want to get trashed.
Nice bet, Adele said. Chill on the pills, okay? We don't need you high and Mom drunk.
I disappeared downstairs after that. Mom would have forced me eventually anyway. But it is easier to just work my muscles until they spasm than to interact with my drunk, angry mother. My phone buzzes for the eighth time this morning, and I ignore it. Henri's been texting nonstop, looking for a hookup. But I won't make that mistake again. I'd rather die from exhaustion here. Plus, I don't think he'll actually tell. Just a little taste was enough for me to get him on team bet. I hope. I decide to work on point before I have to face my closet full of clothes that aren't pretty enough to make Alec love me again. Against Adele's better judgment, I down a little pill before wrapping the ribbons of my point shoes around my ankles, pulling leg warmers up over my tender knee. I iced it late last night, but it's still throbbing from hours in the basement yesterday. Usually, I can fight through the soreness, the aches, the little pulls and twists that inevitably happen. But an old injury flares up, and either the physical pain or the memory is distracting me so much that I'm not able to get in the zone. No one knows about my knee, except Mr. K, who noticed me favoring it once when he was doing a one-on-one session with me last year. He'd touched my kneecap with a finger he'd kissed. I told him it was all better. But today, I can practically feel it swell with pain. It feels like it could burst through my tights, like it could grow so heavy with the weight of the pain, it could pull me to the ground. It could be psychosomatic, I think. I look into my reflection for signs of insanity.
I look scared and pained, but not insane, which means, I suppose, the pain might actually be real. Pain has weight. Adele's the one who told me that. She'd visited me in the hospital that Christmas after our father left and showed me the scar I'd never noticed near her hairline from when she'd hit her head when she was a tiny ballerina child. I don't want to think about any of this, but by the time my slippers are on and I have lifted myself to my toes, my old injury is screaming and throbbing, and I can't possibly dance. So I sit on the floor, trying to stretch, but I remember instead. My father left without warning, and my mother, who had always loved the ballet and the fact that Adele and I were doing so well at the conservatory, suddenly took her interest to a whole new level. She pushed us hard. Adele was ready for it. She was in perfect shape and had been dancing long enough to be able to handle the extra time my mother insisted we put in over the holiday. I was 12, and just making the transition from girl to woman, from little cherub in the Nutcracker to Clara at long last. At school, my meals and rehearsals and time were monitored carefully. Every stretch, every leap, every newly acquired skill was accounted for by Morky and the other teachers. My mother didn't know the rules. She didn't care about the structure or the care with which a girl transitions through her adolescence. She spent her evenings crying over my father in the master bedroom while I tried to drown her out by watching old musicals on the computer in my room. She spent her days drinking white wine and torturing me. Now, I lie on my back, bringing my leg toward my face. I coax it gently, and the pull is delicious, satisfying. But I'm holding back a breakdown, thinking through these memories. My fingers shake a little. I did not give my mind permission to go here. That Christmas, my mother starved me, emptied the refrigerator of all food except apples and celery. In the mornings, she'd allow me an egg and half an English muffin. But the rest of the day, she kept me on coffee and celery, and sometimes an energy bar for dinner, if she couldn't get up the energy to saute a chicken breast. She starved me, and she made me work. Hard. Harder than I did at school. And with fewer calories to help me along. Like she's done this Easter holiday, she practically shut me in the makeshift basement studio all day. Sometimes she'd have Adele coach me. Sometimes a retired teacher from the conservatory. Even back then, I knew my body the way I do now. I knew when I needed to stretch more, when I needed a break, when I could push harder. But she didn't believe me, and I got too scared to speak up. I was so, so little. So I let her push me and push me until my knee ballooned from the stress, and I was so weak that a cold turned to pneumonia. I spent the second half of Christmas break that year in bed, with an overnight stay in the hospital. I remember being grateful for the needle in my arm, the IV filled with glucose pumping into me. I could feel it going through me, a cold, ghost-like strumming in my veins, at last. I line my legs up next to each other, stretching them out straight in front of me so I can compare the shape of one kneecap to the other. Now the inflammation is small, but terrifying. The doctor had heavy warnings about the chronic stress condition, and every few months, I notice a new kind of pain taking shape under the skin. This is the worst it's been in years. Like muscle memory, my knee knows to swell up the second it enters this home, this studio, and especially on any holiday. I recognize Adele's light steps coming down the stairs. My mother's are unfocused, faltering, hard. Adele's are soft ballerina steps. She walks on her toes at all times, like she forgets how to be human and only remembers how to be a dancer. It's one of the things I'm most afraid of, that I will be exactly like Adele, or that I won't be enough like Adele. Both thoughts are chilling. "You've got to get ready, Bet," she says. But her eyebrows jump when she sees me cradling my leg. "Oh, sweetheart, your knee?" She rushes to me, joins me on the floor, and lifts my leg out of my hands like it's a newborn baby. Adele isn't kind about my personal life, or my mother, or my broken heart, or my struggles at school. But she cares about my body. When I'm hurt, she's there, doing everything in her power to make it better. It's how I know she loves me. It's not a big deal, I say. But the pain is making me a little dizzy. Either the pain, or the fact that I have to spend the evening with my mother and with Alec. Can you walk? Of course I can walk. I didn't know it still acted up, Adele says. She runs her fingers over the swollen parts. I'm so sorry. I'm just so, so sorry I let that happen. Adele has one tiny line on her face, near the top of her forehead. And I know it's from her guilt over that Christmas, that she didn't put a stop to it, that she didn't understand how bad it had gotten. She lifts me to my feet. You need help showering? It's really fine. It'll go down, I promise, I say with a smile. I don't know why I'm acting like I'm fine. I wonder, if I milked this, if I could get out of facing dinner and just stay in my room. But it's too late. Adele's already seen me walking without much of a limp, and working my way up the stairs with only a little help from the banister. As soon as we're back on the main floor, she's distracted by my bumbling mother, who is struggling to open a bottle of wine, but who is at least dressed in her Chanel best and looks appropriately maternal and holiday ready. Wear that black dress of yours, Bet, my mother says, not even noticing my swollen knee, my limp, the way Adele keeps rubbing my back. And please do your hair. Big curls, I think. I'm tired of seeing it all stringy around your face. It's not attractive. Needs volume. Adele makes me an ice pack, and my mother scrunches her nose at that, like it's a distraction rather than a necessity. And she doesn't bother asking what I need ice for. The Lucas family declines my mother's invitation for Easter dinner at the last minute, and my mother spends the entire time bitching about Mr. Lucas's new wife, even though she's not really that new. I'm back at the conservatory before 7 p.m. Seeing my sister has given me a newfound mission. I change into a leotard and a dance skirt and don't go to the studios, but to Mr. K's office, which is nestled between the studios on the first floor, just like the nurse's office. I don't know why I'm feeling so reckless, but the thrill of it all makes me feel like I'm my old self again, and I have to risk it. I knock, even though he can see me in the doorway. Mr. K, do you have a minute? I say in a half voice that makes me sound like one of the petit rois. He waves me in, and I squish down in his high-backed chair. His office is just how I remembered it. Wooden bookshelf holding Russian literature, ballet portraits, trophies from his students' competitions, a photo of himself on the Mariinsky theater stage, shaded lamps and their low glow, the scent of hand-rolled cigarettes and alcohol. I know where he hides his little office bar, and the vodka, another secret Adele shared. Nestled into the old familiar space, I fuss with my hands in my lap. Bet, why are you here? Mr. K says finally, a hint of irritation marring his smooth baritone. So I look up, making my eyes go wet and shiny and alluring, like they get on the stage. For one glorious moment, I lock eyes with his, and my adrenaline surges. It's a reflex, after all the dangerous attention he unloaded on me over the last 2 years. Not that his lips a little too close to my neck or his hand on my body during that paw rehearsal felt good exactly. But there is nothing quite like Mr. K really seeing you. Even Adele agrees, and she got more attention than she bargained for. I remember snooping through her cell phone and seeing texts from him, little missives calling her his tiny, pretty thing, asking her to meet him at odd hours. Her texts back were very businesslike, but I know that she didn't mind his attentions. Underneath the scruff and bluster, he's quite handsome, Mr. K. He must be in his early 40s, and he's maintained himself well, his dark hair neatly cropped, and full lips framed by his trim beard. In the old photos on the wall, you can see that he oozes charm and charisma on the stage, a commanding presence that no doubt leaves his patrons wondering how he expends all that energy offstage. But whenever I'd ask her, Adele would blush and change the subject, except to offer PG insights, like, Mr. K likes women who look demure but are secretly powerful, especially on stage. Still, I remember all those nights in the dorm that I'd knock on her door late at night, awoken by a nightmare or growing pains, and her roommate would tell me Adele was off to a private rehearsal. I want to make him remember those times with my sister. I want him to know that I know, and that others can know too, even though that's not something he'd want to get out. That's not something that would sit well with the board, or others in the ballet world, or even the cops. I want him to remember how good I am, and give me the parts that belong to me. I think I am having a hyperextension problem. Adele told me you're good at spotting these things. Better than the nurse. I lie. Would you take a look? I'm scared it's what's holding me back. Why things have changed so drastically this year. He cocks an eyebrow up and waves me over. Fifth position. I almost like being alone with him in his office, letting him inspect my leg muscles. I obey and lift up my dance skirt. Kneeling, he moves my feet, turning them out. Then his fingers graze over my thighs and knees, firm, businesslike, strong. I look down, and his face is emotionless, expressionless, like he barely sees me. So I bow down into a deep plié, catching him off guard as his hand shoots up my thigh and under my skirt. Bet, he says, surprised, pulling his hands back. Careful. But I deepen the plié farther, until I'm on my knees, eye to eye with him, face to face. I'm feeling a bit of a sprain, a pulled muscle maybe, I say, taking his hand and moving it to my upper thigh. Right here. His breathing is shallow, shaky. He knows what I'm asking. Adele said you knew exactly what to do when it happened to her. I pause. To work out the kinks. Bet. He stands abruptly and steps away, creating space between us. I don't know what you're implying, but... I stand too and step forward, closing the distance. It's all right, Mr. K, I say, my voice a whisper. I know you like to look at beautiful things. I untie the ribbons on my skirt, letting it fall, letting him see the shape of me. I stretch in a way so that one of my leotard straps falls off my shoulder. I push my arms together a bit to show a little of the cleavage that I never actually wanted. I won't tell if you touch. He sits down at his desk, busying himself with a stack of papers and then the computer screen. Bet, he says, his voice stern, unyielding. I thought you were getting back on the right track, but clearly things have escalated. Are you doing all right at home? Are things okay with Alec? Maybe it's time we set up an appointment with the school psychologist. Of course, he says, looking up at me pointedly. That's something I'll have to discuss with your mother for approval. But, he grimaces, it seems like the next logical step. I hear the threat in his voice, and realize slowly that despite the fact that he's known me since I was 6, the man doesn't know me at all. I don't take well to threats. That's unfortunate, Mr. K, I say, my voice soft and feathery, but he can't mistake the bite behind my words. I've mentioned to my mother all the extra time you've been lavishing on me, just as you did with Adele, you'll remember, and I'm sure she'll be displeased to know it hasn't helped. I'll just have to call her now and explain how things went here today. Mr. K stands, his face taut, but not quite apologetic.
That's okay, Bet. I'm sure your mother doesn't need to know every detail of your time here. Perhaps we should both just forget this ever happened, he says. Then he walks brusquely to the door and opens it. Now, isn't it time for your evening character dancing class?
I smile at him as I exit. That makes sense, I say as I sashay out, wrapping my skirt around my waist as I exit. My fingers tremble, making me fumble with the tie. We'll just keep this between us. For now. He slams the door a little too hard when I leave. It echoes through the hall. I take deep breaths to get rid of the flush that's probably turned me a brilliant shade of red and get myself together. That was either incredibly smart or incredibly dumb. I can't figure out which. When I look up, Will is standing right in front of me with the biggest smile on his face. Next to him is Eleanor, who looks completely stricken, which is exactly how I feel. It takes her a minute to speak.
What? What were you doing?
Yeah, Bet, Will says, his hideous red eyebrows climbing toward that unfortunate receding hairline, his mouth twisting into that familiar know-it-all smirk. What are you up to?
Nothing, I say, fumbling for words, looking from Will to Eleanor and back.
Mr. K asked me to come see him. My mother's working another fundraiser. No biggie. But I know Eleanor doesn't believe a word I'm saying. I'm a stellar liar, I know. But after a decade of playing my sidekick, she can see right through me.